Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Catnap by Gideon Marcus, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Zort was an idiot. Jixnit paused a moment from fuming, distracted by the need to lick an itchy patch on their butt. Fur was so itchy. Then they had to resist the temptation to pounce on a drifting piece of fluff. Get it together, Jixnit thought. You're not an animal. And that just made them madder. Jixnit shouldn't have to pose as this beast. It was demeaning. But then Zort had to kill that diplomat and snatch his attaché case in broad daylight. Worse yet, they left enough slime to fill a conception vessel, and the Earth aliens now had devices to detect the presence of Zort and anyone else from Tau Ceti. And to cap it all off, Zort got caught posing as the planet's most desirable subsentient creature. So now the beige suits were looking for dogs, too. A large rubber spheroid fell like a meteorite next to Jixnit, and the Cetian jumped nearly out of their skin. A quick dash and Jixnit took refuge under a bush. It was dark and shadowy here, which only underscored how much more pleasant basking in sunlight had been. Damn you, Zort, Jixnit muttered. At least their command of the local idiom was improving. The satisfaction faded quickly, though, consumed by a gnawing emptiness in the Cetian's borrowed belly. Jixnit was hungry, with no idea what to eat or how to get it. The thought of food shifted Jixnit's borrowed senses into overdrive. There! The heavenly, unmistakable aroma of something yummy. Keen eyes that regretfully lacked color sensitivity took in a lone alien on a park bench. Its gender was impossible to determine. They all looked the same to Jixnit anyway. But it seemed to be of an advanced age. In one of its appendages, it clutched some sort of meat and bread combination, warm and wafting. Jixnit had to have it. Cleverness was called for. Guile. There might be agents even in this out-of-the-way place. So Jixnit daintily paced towards the old Earthling, tail straight up in the air in a manner the Cetian had seen others adopt when they were being supplicant. When Jixnit was just a few paces away from the bench, the Earthling crooned happily. Encouraged, Jixnit rubbed against the alien's legs, suppressing a revulsed shudder. The ancient emitted another sound of pleasure and patted its lap. Good gods, does it really want me to jump up there? The smell of that meat, magnified a hundredfold by its proximity, proved a greater force than Jixnit's wounded pride. The Cetian hopped into the Earthling's lap and waited patiently. The reward was quickly forthcoming. The old being offered Jixnit a hunk of the seared cow meat, which the Cetian dispatched in two bites. Good kitty, the alien exclaimed. Jixnit resisted the urge to roll their eyes, instead wriggling demurely. But then the Earthling reached out for Jixnit. The Cetian tensed. Did it see through the ruse? Was it going to capture them? Suddenly, Jixnit was paralyzed by ecstasy, a jolt of pure pleasure going through them like the direct neural stimulators juvenile Cetians used to get cheap kicks instead of going to daily indoctrination. A muted, bemused part of Jixnit's mind noted that the power seemed to come from the Earthling's fingers, which ran expertly up and down the Cetian's fur. The rest of Jixnit melted in sheer bliss. A pleased rumble developed in Jixnit's throat. the Sedian lost all sense of time. Earth wasn't hell, it was paradise. Here in the sunlight, burnt flesh in Jixnit's belly, the Earthling running its joy tendrils over them. Why, Jixnit could almost regard Zort with affection now. Dimly, regretfully, Jixnit became aware of the outside world. A conversation was happening nearby. And you haven't seen any strange people pass by recently? Oh no, officer, just little old me. It's Agent, actually. Jixnit's ears pricked, fear suffusing the Sedian despite the Earthling's pleasure touch. They looked up. Sure enough, there were two aliens in beige suits not two paces away. One of them had some sort of device in its hand. Even at this distance, Jixnit could tell that it radiated on a frequency sympathetic to Sedian mental vibrations. I have to get out of here. But dashing away right then would give Jixnit away, and the Sedian knew that Earthlings had ranged weapons. All Jixnit could do was play it cool. Just a routine precaution, one of the suited Earthlings was saying. Won't take a moment. It waved its device over the ancient's neck. A moment later, the machine glowed a menacing green and emitted an unpleasant sound. This was the end, Jixnit was certain. Clean, the device-wielding alien said to its partner. The other Earthling nodded its bulbous head. Pardon the intrusion, it said. The pair of agents sauntered off. The old alien waved to the departing beige suits, which had the irritating side effect of turning off the pleasure ray. Still, Jixnit was warmed by success. For the first time in several planetary rotations, the Sedian felt safe. Perhaps Jixnit could shack up with the Ancient for a while. Jixnit's mission of espionage and sabotage could wait a few days until the crisis blew over. Their mind reeled at the vision of days of sunlight basking, free food, and endless joy rays. Ready to go home, kitty? The Earthling asked, its face an ugly sea of creases. Jixnit stretched and poked their tail straight up, eyes wide with excitement. Hell yes, the Sedian said in decidedly uncat-like fashion. The old alien looked at Jixnit in surprise. Its eyes darted towards the form of the departing agents. It lifted a hand tentatively. Jixnit froze, paralyzed with despair. I've blown it, just like Zort. The Sedian looked pleadingly at the Earthling. The Earthling stared back, expressionless. Then, after an endless moment, the old being shrugged its shoulders, showed its teeth, and began caressing Jixnit again. The Sedian relaxed, enfolded by waves of ecstasy. Annotation 37. Story and music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Section 1. After Device 004 sat in the desert sand near Landers, California, United States of America, for 9 days, human subject Jay picked it up with gloved hands. Based on her verbal communication to herself, she quickly identified it as space junk. She may be of unusual intelligence because device 003 was misidentified by human subjects E and F as prosaic, specifically as part of an airplane. There may be a geographic factor that determines human intelligence. She has not yet noticed the lenses and microphones, as expected, due to their size and placement. She placed device 004 in her bag and drove off in her surface vehicle to another location in the desert. During this time, there was no light available to the lenses, and the only recorded sounds were the vehicle's engine and a dog breathing loudly. Section 2. Subject J conferred with Subject K, male, about the device. J had to convince K it was indeed space junk. K was concerned about the device's potential radioactivity. They then discussed the proper way to report the device to the authorities. While K wanted to bring it to their local police station, J decided to bring it to her university professor. While a military observation is preferred, there is possible classified intelligence in some universities, so surveillance is currently deemed worthy of continuation. Cameras observed a seating area in the shared residence of J and K with nothing remarkable, and the microphones recorded the sounds of cooking, a news report containing nothing useful for our purposes, and some form of entertainment. Section 3. Jay contacted her university professor, human subject L, and informed him of the space junk. L requested pictures of the device, but Jay was hesitant due to privacy concerns. Jay placed the device back in her bag, then back in the vehicle. She was alone, without her dog and K, while she drove the device to be inspected by L. While in the bag, there was no light available to the cameras, and the microphones again recorded the sound of Jay's vehicle engine. Upon arrival at L's university, there were too many voices for the microphones to identify any useful intelligence, until Jay arrived at L's office. After a brief, useless conversation, Jay took the device from the bag and showed it to L. Despite his scientific background, L was not able to distinguish the lenses or microphones from the rest of the device's components. L said, "I don't know what it is, but it is not from a plane." L wrote some information on a piece of paper, handed it to J, and said, "This is the only person I know that can identify it. He will have to meet you on the perimeter because you won't get past security." Cameras recorded an untidy and rudimentary laboratory with outdated instruments, even by third planet standards. Results from the university were limited, but the possible military connection is promising enough to continue observation. Section 4. Jay telephoned human subject M, a military contractor, and made arrangements to meet on Highway 395, 1 mile away from the security gates to Area 51, a secondary target of our observation. The device remained in the bag in transit, and when Jay stopped the vehicle near Rachel, Nevada, she quickly handed the bag to M. Neither Jay nor M communicated verbally. M's security clearance allowed him to enter Area 51, and proceed to the boarding area for the bus to Groom Lake, the location of Site 4, or S4, the primary target of observation. No intelligence was collected at Area 51 because the device remained in the bag, and no human subjects communicated with each other verbally between Area 51 and S4. The cameras were only able to record momentarily while M opened the bag to look at the device. There was no light available to camera 1, but camera 2 recorded M's face, neck, and hair, and the blacked-out windows of the vehicle. Section 5. M arrived at S4, and the affirmative beep from the hand scanner allowed him to proceed through the security gate. There was no inquiry related to the contents of Jay's bag. Microphones recorded footsteps, muffled conversation between unknown human subjects, and machinery of an unknown origin. M entered a work area and small hangar and began to speak to human subject N, military rank Rear Admiral, United States Navy. M removed the device and handed it to N, who then placed the device in an observation chamber which measured for radiation and pathogens, with negative result. Upon removal, Camera 1 recorded M and N seated at a table, and Camera 2 recorded an aerospace vehicle whose origin was unknown, but not made with technology available anywhere on Third Planet. There were no crude metal welds or fasteners on the exterior of the craft that would indicate Third Planet construction. Although S4 is the primary target of observation, there is little useful information from this vantage point. Prospective intelligence may be limited without the device inside of the unknown aerospace vehicle. Microphones recorded M and N discussing device 004. And although they seemed aware that it was not simple space junk, they did not notice the lenses and microphones. The microphones recorded a brief conversation in which M and N postulated several misguided theories about the purpose of the device. N suggested that he bring the device inside the cockpit of the vehicle during the next scheduled flight to see if it would react with the instruments on the unknown aerospace vehicle. M thanked N and left the hangar, and N placed the device into a locker, where cameras and microphones had no available data. Section 6. Several days later, N removed the device from the locker and carried it into the cockpit of the unknown aerospace vehicle. Camera 1 observed two small chairs, too small for a Third Planet adult, and Camera 2 recorded the control panel of the vehicle. There were no right angles or sharp edges, and all surfaces were smooth and gray, further evidence of its construction not being from Third Planet. As the device was now in the cockpit, the most lucrative location within the primary observation target, the cameras and microphones were switched to high-resolution constant transmission mode. As the scheduled weekly Wednesday night launch time approached, N engaged all but one of the instruments on the control panel by tapping them with his finger. Camera 2 recorded blinking and constant lights with colors from throughout the visible spectrum, and the microphones recorded a low hum from the gravity amplifiers and the negative pressure of wind in the hangar. The vehicle slowly gained a small amount of elevation and exited the hangar doors and turned towards Groom Lake. Device 004's electromagnetic, gravitational, and gyroscopic sensors sensed propulsion systems that were not possible to create on Third Planet. As the vehicle approached the dry lake bed, N engaged the final instrument. Instantly, it began to shriek and blink furiously, and it disabled the cameras and all sensors except for the microphone. All of the lights on the control panel began to blink quickly and turned red. Both the vehicle and device 004 began to malfunction at once. The final sounds recorded by the microphones were the explosion of the gravity amplifiers and the impact of the vehicle on the dry lake bed. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Catnap by Gideon Marcus, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, and Annotation 37, music and story by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. Available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program.